Hello and welcome to the Anthropocene Reviewed, a podcast where we review different facets of the human-centered planet on a five-star scale. I'm John Green, and today I'll be reviewing 17, that's right, 17, topics suggested by listeners who emailed me at anthropocenereviewed@gmail.com. Thousands of you have been kind enough to write in, despite the email address being nearly impossible to spell. You send suggestions and encouragement. You send your own beautifully written and carefully considered reviews. Or you send your worries and fears and hopes. People sometimes write to tell me this podcast has made them cry. So I guess I should reveal in turn that your emails make me cry almost every day. With joy and anger and shared grief. I cry because I am moved by what humans can do for each other and because I am moved by what we can't or don't do for each other. I don't respond to the emails, which I feel bad about, but it's not practical to respond to each one, and to respond with a form letter would feel wholly insufficient. And so I choose to leave the other end of the line silent. I'm sorry about that, and I hope you'll forgive me and accept by way of apology this listener suggestion spectacular. First, 12-year-old Beatrice wrote in to say that she is bullied at school and wants me to review being a tween. Beatrice, I'm sorry that people are being cruel to you. I was also bullied when I was your age. And it was horrible. Bullying is often a trap there's no simple way out of. It feels like no matter how you respond, they'll keep ridiculing you, because it's not about you or your response. It's about their desire to feel bigger by making you feel smaller. There's a song by my favorite band, the Mountain Goats, called You Were Cool, and part of it goes, "It's good to be young, but let's not kid ourselves. It's better to pass on through those years and come out the other side with our hearts still beating." Beatrice, you are going to pass on through these years and come out the other side with your heart still beating. It is hard to be between things, so much so that your time of life is named for betweenness. And I'm sorry that being 12 sucks. It will pass. But even so, I give tweenness 2 stars. Speaking of my favorite band, several of you have written in to recommend that I review the Mountain Goats. I don't know how to tell you about my love for their music, except to say that it is genuinely unconditional. I do not have a favorite Mountain Goats album or song. They are all my favorites. Their songs have been my main musical companion since my friend Lindsay Robertson played me the song "The Best Ever Death Metal Band Out of Denton" half my life ago. The Mountain Goats have shaped the way I think and listen so profoundly that I don't know who I would be without them, only that I wouldn't be me. I mean, I don't want to overstate it, but there are moments in Mountain Goats songs that are almost scriptural to me. In the sense that they give me a guide to the life I want to live and the person I want to become. Consider, for instance, this couplet. "You were a presence full of light upon this earth, and I am a witness to your life and to its worth." That's a calling to me, to present more light and to better witness the light in others. 5 stars, obviously. Coco suggested that I review Automatic Doors. I like that Automatic Doors open for people, but I also kind of like that they open for other animals. Like, I recently watched a video in which Automatic Doors opened for a moose. And while I realize it isn't ideal for the moose or the grocery store to have a moose in a grocery store, I was nonetheless delighted by the underlying idea of doors that will open for literally anything that is large and mobile. I give Automatic Doors 4 stars. Penelope wrote to ask that I review spoonerisms, a form of wordplay named after the English minister and Oxford don William Spooner, who was supposedly prone to them. In a spoonerism, sounds at the beginnings of words are swapped. Spooner once supposedly said, for instance, that the Lord is a shoving leopard rather than a loving shepherd, or that it is customary to cuss the bride rather than customary to kiss the bride. One notable fan of spoonerisms was the Chinese-American linguist Yuan Ren Zhao, who invented a widely adopted way of transcribing Chinese words into the Latin alphabet. He also translated, or helped translate, many books, including the work of his wife, Buwei Yang Zhao. She was a doctor who co-founded an obstetrics hospital in China before moving to the U.S. and becoming an author. Buwei Yang Zhao's 1945 book, How to Cook and Eat in Chinese, helped introduce many Chinese dishes to an American audience. It's also one of the wittiest cookbooks of all time. About arguing with her daughter, Buwei Yang Zhao wrote, "You know how it is with modern daughters and mothers who think we are modern." How to Cook and Eat in Chinese and Buwei Yang Zhao's equally fascinating memoir, Autobiography of a Chinese Woman, have been out of print for decades, unfortunately. But among those books' lasting gifts to us are the English terms stir-fry and pot-sticker. Pot-stickers are, for me, a solid 4.5-star food. Stock pickers of the investment banking variety, I'd give 2.5 stars. As for spoonerisms, let's split the difference. 3.5 stars. After the break, we'll have reviews of Dazzle Camouflage, headphones, and much more. But first, you might think that I am the only writer ever to pay the bills by selling insurance, but no. The poet Wallace Stevens worked for decades for an insurance company. "Let's see the very thing and nothing else," Stevens once famously wrote, presumably about my discursive ad copy. So here's the very thing and nothing else. The Anthropocene Reviewed is supported by Policy Genius, which compares quotes from top life insurance companies for you all in one place. This doesn't just save you a lot of legwork, you could also save $1,500 or more by using Policy Genius to compare life insurance policies and get the right policy for you. Once you apply, the Policy Genius team handles all the paperwork and red tape for free. Policy Genius. Let be the finale of seem. How many Wallace Stevens quotes do you think they're going to let me suggest for their motto? Policy Genius. I do not know which to prefer, the beauty of inflections or the beauty of innuendos. Policy Genius. The summer night is like a perfection of thought. Okay, back to the show. Laura wrote to ask I review Dazzle Camouflage, a brief and strange attempt, mostly during World War I, to camouflage ships using stripes of contrasting colors. Warships were painted like zebras, basically, or like M.C. Escher artworks. Light and dark stripes would interrupt and intersect each other, such that, especially in the distance, dazzle-camouflaged warships became a kind of op art, and the human eye would struggle to figure out which part of the ship was which, or even what kind of ship it was. There's little evidence that dazzle camouflage actually worked, but it still became quite common, especially in the British Navy. Mostly, when I think of dazzle camouflage, I think about how strange 1918 must have been. It was an exceptionally deadly year for humans, thanks to World War I, a flu pandemic, and the ongoing horrors of colonialism. Mechanization and internationalization had promised to make human life better, but instead, life expectancy was lower on average than it had been in 1908 or 1898. It all must have felt so baffling and self-contradictory and absurd. It's telling to me that one of the lasting images of that era, John Nash's 1918 painting Over the Top, at first glance appears to be a kind of dazzle camouflage, dark and light forms intersecting, before you realize it's a painting of soldiers going over the top of a trench into a snow-covered field. We would like to imagine, of course, that the contradictions of modernity are behind us in this postmodern world, that the dazzle-camouflaged past is settled. But as William Faulkner put it, the past is never dead. It's not even past. Who knows which part of the ship is which, especially now? I give Dazzle Camouflage 1.5 stars. While we're on the topic of the not past, so many of you have requested reviews of pandemics. I understand the urge to put a positive spin on negative experience, but I find nothing to recommend about pandemics. I'm not here to criticize other people's hope, but personally, whenever I hear someone waxing poetic about the silver linings to all these clouds, I think about a wonderful poem by Clint Smith called "When People Say We Have Made It Through Worse Before." All I hear is the wind slapping against the gravestones of those who did not make it. The poem begins. I give pandemics 1 star. Zenoth wrote me to say that his sister Afifa had introduced him to the podcast, thank you Afifa, and to ask if I would consider reviewing headphones. Like many of the things I rely on daily and assume to be permanent fixtures of human history, I had never previously thought about headphones. But here's how new they are. While some headphones were used by radio operators and the like before this, the first stereo headphones for listening to music were developed in 1958 by John C. Koss, a jazz musician who is still alive. Stereo headphones are younger than Burger King. The magic of headphones has always been that you can listen to music nobody else can hear. A private and personal soundtrack to your life. This was especially useful to me as a teenager, but I still rely upon headphones to give me privacy in public settings. The phonograph made music recordable and distributable at a huge scale, but headphones made recorded music and podcasts what I often need them to be, unshared and unshareable. Of course, there are downsides to being able to drown out the world, but still, I give headphones 4.5 stars. Chris and Michael wrote to suggest a review of the Times New Roman font. We all have friends who we remain close to because of history and circumstance rather than a deep inherent affinity. Like, yes, on any given day, you might prefer to hang out with Georgia or even Cambria. But Times New Roman has a place in your life, and it has been good to you and reliably legible in times when you needed a font. And so, even though it isn't your first choice font these days, you still give it 3 stars. A listener named Tara, or possibly Tara, wrote in to suggest I review that thing people do where they sign their emails with one letter or just their initials. A habit that, by the way, I can report has been adopted by many listeners of this podcast. I used to do this too. It just felt somehow better or cooler to dash off a quick JMG at the end of an email, as if I were a little too busy to type my actual name, which is, to be fair, one entire letter longer than my initials. But then my friend Amy Krauss Rosenthal wrote in one of her books, "I cannot be the only one who finds it slightly self-important to sign emails with one's initials." And it is perhaps a further sign of my self-importance that I was pretty sure she was writing at least in part about me, and so I've abandoned the practice. But if your name is significantly longer than your initials, I suppose it's justifiable. 2.5 stars. Keaton, a young person in Minnesota, wrote to me, "Hello, I am not very good at writing emails, but I think you should do a bit on the mineral iron. It is a very good mineral." I agree, Keaton, and it's strange to consider that although I myself am made out of chemical elements, I've never paused to review one. By mass, iron is the most common element on Earth. It's also the most common nutritional deficiency in humans. Iron and the steel derived from it make human tools and also human weapons. I wouldn't want to live in a world without iron, of course, and indeed, I couldn't live in such a world. But I have reservations about iron too, about iron fists and iron curtains. And for that matter, I'm not that keen on spinach or red meat. Still, iron made both the Anthropocene and its residents possible, so I feel like I have to give it 5 stars. Casey requested a review of bath bombs, which were invented in 1989 by a British woman named Mo Constantine. She was inspired by Alka-Seltzer, a tablet that becomes effervescent when placed in water. Mo Constantine was the co-founder of Lush Cosmetics, which remains, in my opinion, the world's best purveyor of bath bombs. I love bath bombs, and really anything that makes a warm bath feel special and calming and relaxing. I also use candles and lavender-scented bath salts. I take at least 4 baths a week, and I really, really love them. I can enjoy an excellent shower as well, but in general, I find showers to be vastly overrated. I mean, I understand that they use less water and in some cases can get you cleaner, but for me, taking a shower feels like being attacked by millions of tiny pellets of water. A bath is calm and enveloping, and most importantly for me, very quiet. In fact, sometimes I'll close my eyes, and the only sound I'll hear is the fizzing of the bath bomb and what Sylvia Plath called that old brag of my heart. I am. I am. I am. I give bath bombs 4.5 stars. A 13-year-old listener in the Philippines named Miguel wrote recently to ask that I review memes, a topic many of you have emailed about. I first encountered what we might now call an internet meme in 1993 on CompuServe, where users on the teen forums would arrange text characters into figures that would tell jokes, or riff on other jokes, or make arguments, and so on. Now, of course, I am so old that many contemporary meme formats just baffle me, partly because I don't know enough about SpongeBob, but partly because meme language has become extremely sophisticated and nuanced, precisely so that old people won't understand it, allowing those in the know to enjoy their deep-fried, meta-dank meme discourse without idiots like me butting in. I give memes 4 stars. Croy, Catherine, and Cameron each wrote to request a review of Sporks. The only thing I like about Sporks is that in 2 separate cases, they are 1 T away from being something wonderful. Storks or sports. The fundamental failure of a spork is that, like so many other combinatory inventions, instead of being a spoon that is also a fork, it is a bad spoon that is also a bad fork. Another example is the beer helmet, a 1.5-star invention that Charlie asked me to review, wherein 2 cup holders are attached to a helmet. You then drink the beer through a straw that is also attached to the contraption, except 1, the thing never works right, and 2, who wants to drink beer through a straw? Of course, sometimes combinatory inventions turn out somewhat better. Like, as a child, I liked having an alarm clock that was also a radio. And as an adult, I like having a portable telephone that is also a calculator and a portal to vast archives of information and a device for playing Tetris. But for a combinatory invention to work, the alarm clock must not get worse when becoming part of a radio. A spork can neither spoon nor fork as well as its progenitors. So, for me, it's 2 stars. Alex, Jason, and Kayla were among those who wrote in to suggest I review The Moon. When I was young, I found the moon to be a bit maudlin for some reason. It's just so bright up there, and its phases are a little over the top for my taste. It's like, look at all my beautiful angles. Maybe I've been soured by reading so many stories in which the beloved is compared to the moon, turning always away, here one day and gone the next, waxing and waning, etc. Anyway, something about the moon always roused my cynicism. But then one night, when I was 22 years old, I was working a 24-hour shift as a student chaplain at a children's hospital, and I went outside to smoke a cigarette around 3 in the morning. I was sitting on a curb, bone-tired, looking out at this empty playground, when I noticed that I could see the playground and the shadows it cast, not because of streetlights, but because of the moon. I suppose I'd known moonlight existed, but somehow I'd made it to adulthood without ever having a personal experience of it. And there was the world, lit by something that cannot shine light, but still finds a way to share light. On that night, and since, I've found quite a lot of hope in that fact. So, I give the moon 4 stars, even if it is a little cheesy. Thanks for listening to The Anthropocene Reviewed, which was written by me, edited by Stan Muller, and produced by Rosianna Hulse-Rojas and Jenny Lawton. Joe Plord is our technical director, and Hannes Brown makes the music. And thanks again to all of you who've written in over the years or reviewed the podcast on your local podcast listening service. If you'd like to suggest a review or just say hi, our address is anthropocenereviewed@gmail.com. The other end of the line may be silent, but my ear is always to the phone. Thanks again for being here.